Session number 5868, Horton Monday, part 35.
There was nothing for it, and now I'll give you another case. Almost the same way you got a court martial. And that was when you was on, every so far along the trench, there'd be a little doggy where four or five of you could get in, perhaps a few more. Now, if you was on, and it was your turn on sentry, and they happened to start within a few showers over, and you began to get just a little bit nervous and didn't know what how to do, and you was really nervous and frightened, well, you'd drop in the dugout. And that was fatal, because if officer came along and found you wasn't on sentry, you'd had it. And that was another certain firing squad. After the war, when I came back to Wolverton to work, I was a bodymaker. Well, now, in each of those ambulance coaches, we had to strip the whole of the interior and turn them into brake vans. Now, this is what I want to get at. Every one of those ambulance coaches had got a padded cell in it. One part of the coach was all set aside with a padded cell to put men in that had collapsed in the trenches and at the front. Now, I'll tell you for what, there was such a hell of a prayer, I would have said this to you. Hell of a prayer in England when it became realised what was happening. So many people having to face firing squads, they altered the tune. The British forces, the headquarters and that, altered the tune completely and called what they called shell shock. And it was shell shock, although a good many tried to fiddle it afterwards, but that nearly cut the whole of this firing squad business out, because I put these padded cells in the ambulance train. I was brought back over into England and sent to asylums and hospitals and so forth. Well, now, what actually happened then, it was found out that many of the cases was where it was found in local newspapers, such as, I'll give you an instance. Well, the ones I've been talking about, I don't mean the one that had the medal. I nearly said his name then, I nearly let it slip. What I'm talking about is, we'll say, Bill Brown. Now, your local paper would have the headlines, oh, Bill Brown, local lad, local hero, gets the military medal, or DCM, whatever it is. And then another week, it might have been in, oh, local lad, well-known athlete, Jack Jones, his mother had a lovely letter from the colonel, died in action fighting for his country. What a shame that rubbish was put in the paper. And yet that poor bugger had been stuck up against a wall and shot for cowardice. Now I'll give you just a few real facts that I know that happened. I'll give you the names of these now, Matty, because that's all right. Poor old boy's dead now, this one. Now, when we was at Plug Street, I'm talking about old Fatty Oldham, mate of ours. We were all mates together. So was this other one that had the DCM. And now old Fatty wrote a letter home. You see, he was allowed what they call a green envelope to write private correspondence, mainly I think for married men to write to the wives and so forth. Anyway, what they call a green envelope. Now you could seal that down. Well, occasionally they checked them. This was early on. They opened the green envelope. Well, poor old Fatty, he wrote a letter to his gal, old Liz Sprague. Well, he did eventually afterwards marry her and, you know, all right. Well, now he wrote a letter to Liz and told her where we was, Plug Street Wood, like different chaps, you know, and mates. Eddie wasn't about his mates, and some had been wounded and some killed and all that. And they opened Fatty's letter, and blowed if he didn't get a court martial for writing to his gal. Now his sentence was so many days tied to the wheel. Now, I don't know, I forget now, so long ago, how many days Fatty had. Now, every day, whether it teemed or rained, it didn't matter what it was, old Fatty had to be tied to the wheel for so many hours, each day. Now, I'll tell you the name of the man that tied him up, and that was Bugle Major Charlie Teagle. Now, years after the war, when we come back, old Charlie used to tell us then, and Fatty, he used to bloody near made me weep every day having to tie him to that wheel. But that was his job, and that's what he got it for. Well, now, old Fatty, later on, he's a brave chap, Fatty. Well, here I'll go again, although I don't believe in him. Now, later on, old Fatty, he was a stretcher bearer. Well, that was a hell of a risky job, of course. Well, Fatty had the military medal. And I just got out of dropping my own medicine again out of the bottle. Well, Fatty had the military medal. Now, it was said then amongst the chaps, crew, I was home wounded then when this happened, but they said, normally, old Fatty should have had the VC, because what he'd done was far better than most of them done that had got one. But because he had had a court-martial for that silly little thing, writing a letter, I reckon that's what stopped him. But later on, he did get recognised a bit more. He had what they call the Italian Croix de Guerre. Now, just for a minute to talk about that shell shock and cowardice and so forth. It happens very often. I see it myself, and I've been like it myself. We've all been like it at times in the trenches. There's one day it don't affect you a little bit. I'll keep stopping the cough. I've got a hell of a cold again, I know that. Well, now one day you feel a treat. They're shelling and messing about for him, but you don't seem to worry. Another day, you just feel just the opposite. You know, you feel a bit jittery and think, oh hell, I wish they'd back in, stop it. You get that feeling. Well, you can't help it, and if it happens, you happen to have one of them turns and anything goes wrong, that's the cowardice again. Can't help it. Now I'm going to tell you another tale about myself. What happened actually to me as I ran hellishly close to getting a court-martial. I hadn't had a good captain, I should have had. I'll tell you how it happened. Just behind the lines of Plug Street, there was a big farm. Now, they'd been almost completely blown away. The wall, some of the walls stood, but underneath there was a long cellar all underneath. And at the back of the farm, there was a small farmer's cottage for the farm worker. Now, underneath that, there was also a cellar. Now, there was a platoon or a mob of men put reserve underneath the farmhouse. And, and this cottage at the back, I was a lance corporal. Oh, blimey, I had made me a lance corporal. I don't know what the hell for, but it don't matter. They had done then. And I was a lance corporal. Well, I'd got a section of about 8 in it then. And I was underneath in the cellar at this cottage behind the farm. Now, one day, the Germans opened up with all the clatter with shells. So I crawled out the cellar, crawled along the floor and lay behind the wall looking out in case Jerry was trying to break through across that bit of narrow no man's land. I laid there. I told our blokes to get ready in case. They was down in the cellar. Now, shell hit the wall of this farm, and I heard a hell of a shout and a squeal, and I hollered across, loud as I could, who is it? Now, one chap shouted back, he said, it's your old mate, Sid. I never thought for a second what I'd done. I jumped up and started to run across to this farm, and this bloke shouted back, go on back, he'll be all right, go on, he'll be all right. So I turned round, I ran back, and lay behind the wall. Eventually the shelling stopped, so I went got back down in the cellar. Well, when night time came, a sergeant and a corporal came to this cellar where I was at this cottage, and he said, Corporal, he said, you're under arrest. I said, what the hell for? He said, you are. He turned to this other corporal, he said, you take charge. He said to me, you come with me. I said, what's it all about? He said, you'll find out. So anyway, on the way back, he said, you know what you'll be charged with, don't you? I said, no. He said, well, cowardice and desertion. Desertion under shell fire and cowardice. I said, bloody hell. He said, you'll find that's right. Well, I knew the answer to that. Firing squad, no doubt whatever. Anyway, he took me back in front of old Captain Birchall. Well, he was a nice captain, he was brave as hell he was. He got killed eventually, but he was a brave, oh blimey, a bit later tonight, half eight. And I went in front of him and he said, you know what you've done, don't you? I said, yeah. He says, you know your charge? I said, no. Desertion and cowardice. I said, no. And I explained as well as I could what had actually happened. I said, I didn't desert. He said, you did. He said, I saw you from the dugout run away. I explained how and why. He said, well, he said, you know the answer. But if I send this report through, he said, you know the answer. But he were a decent bloke, and he'd give me a blooming good dressing down. He said, I don't know how you wasn't it. But apart from that, he said, what about your men? He said, suppose you'd have been killed, and they'd have broke across. He said, who was going to lead them? Were you running away like that? He said, you running away, get killed, and there's your men haven't got a lead. Well, he didn't half dress me down, but I asked for it. And at the finish, he said, well, he said, there's only one small thing in your favour. He said, that was, instead of you running away, when you run out of that cottage, across to that farm, you were running towards the Germans and not away from them. He said, that's the only loophole you could have possibly had. But he said, it didn't stop you running away from them. Now, I've tried to explain as well as I can. I was through the whole show. I saw all sorts, heroes and cowards. And I saw a coward one day, and the same man's been a hero the next day. So I don't believe there's any such thing at all. Because in a war, you're not human. But I'll give you my final view of what I think, who were the heroes and who were the cowards, in my view. And that is, the heroes, to me, were the 2 million men that lined up outside the recruiting offices in England. They were the heroes. Now I'll give you the cowards. They were the thousands that lay dead in no man's land and the prisoners of war. They were the cowards because they were no further use to the war effort. And that's my summing up of heroes and cowards. Well, now, when I got old, my old darling and me, we had a ticket to go to the Albert Hall at the memorial service on the 11th of November, remembrance service. Well, now, when they dimmed the lights and the poppers began to fall, there was a loud, clear voice used to speak. At the going down of the sun and in the morning, we will remember them. Now, remember who? I'll leave you to judge that. Well, now, I'll tell the tale about that. I'd better start and drift back to talk about the prisoner of war days. You'll say, what the hell was he wandering about? Well, now, I ended the other tape, I believe, where we'd been down in the village at Domna. The old bird let us out, had a right binge at the village pub. Well, we'd done very well. We had a nice night, as I explained. Then the orders came through that we got to go back to Eelsburg. Now, I'll try to rake me brains and how the hell we got back. I cannot remember. Not only that, I can't remember going how we got from Eelsburg to Domna. But never mind what actually happened, I can remember. We'd all got our boxes of food, a food parcel with all the boxes and that. Well, there must have been some marching to be done, because what was decided was that they couldn't carry the boxes. So it was decided that I should go down in the village of Domna, find an old boy that done a bit of carrying with his cart, wagon thing and horse, done a bit of carrying. I went and found him and arranged that I should stay behind, pack all our boxes on his old van thing, pack them on that, and drove through the night. And it must have been when we drove into the camp at Eelsburg. Now our chaps there, they were waiting at the gate, right outside of the gate, waiting for us to come, because they began to wonder where the hell I'd got to. But anyway, that's how I arrived, and I can't remember any other way how we got there. That's the only way I can remember. Well, now, I've about come to the end of my experiences as a prisoner of war. I just arrived at the main gates of the large prisoner of war camp at Eelsburg. Now, our little mob was waiting for me when I got there, quite anxious as to whether I'd got there boxes with me safely. Well, I had got them. Well, when we got inside the camp, I found that a certain part of it had been put on one side, a sort of a compound for the British prisoners. And there was quite a large crowd that just began to come in, and they still was coming in from the different lagers in that part of East Prussia. Now, amongst the others there were several others there, British prisoners, that had been captured rather late, and they was like we were when we first went there. They had been moved about Germany and working in different parts, and the British Red Cross had not found them, the same as it was with us early on, and many of them was in quite a middling way. But we soon whipped round, because all of us then was well fixed for food through the Red Cross, and we looked after them and helped them out quite a bit. But they told us that some of their party had also been sent out on these commandos. They call them commandos where you get sent to. And I was waiting for them to come back, so we didn't see all of them. Well, now, the first evening we was there, The Germans gave us quite a lot of privilege. Told us we could go down in the town if we liked, have an evening there, which we did do. Now, speaking for myself, I wandered down into Erzberg. It's quite a big town. And along a street I heard some singing in a pub, and I dived in. And of course they were singing English songs, of course. When I got in there, there was an English chap on a piano and quite a crowd of British prisoners having a good old sing song. Well, that went on for quite a time. I enjoyed a real good time. But eventually, along came the German police and guards from the camp. I rounded all the lot of us up and took us back into the camp. Well, now, what we found out after, they soon told us, the others, when they came back, there had been a bit of trouble in the town, because some of them was looking into a shop window, a tailor shop or a drapery shop, whichever you like. I was looking in the window, and spread out there was quite a lot of British underclothes, such as pants, vests, shirts and socks and all sorts of things in this shop, and they was a hell of a price, out of all reason it seemed to be, but they was from our parcel. Now, when they got back to camp that night, they realised, of course, you see, there were so many English, so many Germans, as I've told you before, had to check the parcels, open them, check them and close them up. Well, evidently, during all that time, here and there, they'd just taken one odd thing out. So you get 300 or 400 parcels every week, they had a good chance to take a little bit out here and there, and that's what happened. Now, there was hell to play. I tried to find these chaps, 3 or 4 of them that had been working there all the time. They found out who they was, and it would have happened very bad, but the Germans come and looked after them. They took these chaps away from us and put them in their own quarters, in their own headquarters, where they were. The Germans looked after them, wouldn't let us get near them. In fact, we never heard of them again. I don't know what did happen. After a day or two, that old Serbian that I told you about that was with us at Domno, a good old stick, I've told you before about him. Well, now, one day when we were there, we'd been there 2 or 3 days then, I dare say. In he came into our part of the camp, found me, and we had a good old natter and that. And he was still up to his old tricks, and he said to me, "Is there anything I can get for you?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "I tell you what, I would like if you could find some rags or cloth or something, and make me a sort of a kit bag." I said, "That'd be easier to put my stuff in now than card in a box about." I said, "If you can find that, that'd be all right." Do you know whether for the next day he came round and he'd got one? And he'd got it all sewn up nice, all pretty coloured stuff, just about the size of a kit bag, or perhaps a little larger. So I said, "Where'd you get that from?" "Oh, that was all right," he said. "I went across and hung round the German quarters," he said, "and there was a curtain hanging over a door," he said, "and I whipped it down." Now, you fancy that? He pinched that off the German quarters. Where the hell he got a needle and thread from, I don't know, but he made me a nice old kit bag. In fact, after I got home, my old darling, after I got married, I kept it, and she made cushion covers with it. It was a lovely bit of stuff. Now, I wander off now just for a little bit different. A German come to me when I was in there. I used to jabber with some of the Jerrys a bit in that camp. And he told me, he said, "There's just a few," he said, "of your English prisoners in the lazarette." Well, that's the name of the camp hospital then. And he said, "Would you like to go and see them?" I said, "Yeah." He took me in, and there were 3 or 4 they're English chaps, and I was in a hell of a state. It was starvation, nothing more. And I went back and told a little party and some of the others that was with us as well. Well, we raked up stuff such as Quaker oats and stuff like that and took it into this hospital and asked if I'd feed them with it. Well, I suppose they did, I don't know, but I only went in there just that once. But they was in a very, very middling way. They gave us quite a lot of freedom to wander about there. We'd done practically everything we liked. To sit about, play cards and so forth. They didn't interfere with us, not in the least. Well, there was just outside the camp, it was a sort of a long stretch of hollows, and we wandered across there, two or three of us, one day, and stood on the bank watching, and the Germans there, they was testing out some machine guns, and we stood there and watched them for a few minutes, and we suddenly realised, oh well, it'd be quite easy for them to make an accident and just swish them up towards our way, so we left them to it, but otherwise they was quite sociable with us. Day, one of the Germans come to me and he said, there's two of your English chaps dead. Would you bring one or two of your mates and bury them? So I said, yes. Well, there was four of us went. Now, it's just a little bit hazy now, but as near as I can remember, I'll tell you. But this part I do remember ever so well.